Imagine trying to buy a piece of a massive, I mean, gleaming logistics hub in Jeddah.
Oh, yeah. Good luck with that.
Right. Like 2 years ago, you would have needed what, 50 million rials, plus an elite institutional banking network and a whole team of corporate lawyers just to, get a look at the prospectus.
Exactly. It was a completely walled garden.
But today, you can literally buy a slice of that exact same building while you're standing in line waiting for your morning coffee.
It is wild how fast things have changed.
It really is, but here's the catch. Making commercial real estate as easy to buy as like a digital stock, it's exactly what is leading some investors straight into a massive hidden trap.
Yeah, it's a profound structural shift for the market. I mean, we
Yeah.
are seeing a complete transformation from this concentrated institutional risk to highly accessible, democratized diversification.
Right.
But you are spot on. That accessibility creates this really dangerous illusion of simplicity.
Which is the core of what we are unpacking today. Welcome to the deep
I'm
dive.
glad to be here.
So we have our hands on a highly insightful 2026 article, and it's titled Two, Fractional Real Estate Investment Strategies for Saudi Investors. And our mission today is to decode how the Saudi real estate market is fundamentally rewiring itself.
Right, because it really is a rewiring.
Exactly. We want to show you, the investor listening right now, how to get a foothold in this lucrative market and, do it without risking all your capital on a single overwhelming commitment.
Because as someone who loves to stay informed, you probably want to know the actual mechanics of how this functions under the hood.
Totally. You want the strategy, the risks, and the underlying logic without being buried in impenetrable financial jargon.
Which is what always happens with real estate.
Right. So let's start with the overarching mechanism. Traditional real estate is basically like being forced to buy an entire bakery just because you want a piece of cake.
I love that analogy.
It's so true, right? You have to fund the entire multi-million dollar operation, hire the staff, maintain the ovens, and if nobody buys bread that week, you are the only one taking the hit.
Yeah, you carry all the risk.
Exactly. Fractional ownership, on the other hand, finally lets you just buy a slice. You get your proportional share of the profits, but you rely on a professional manager, the platform in this case, to keep the bakery running.
And that highlights the separation of capital risk from operational burden. I mean, you are participating directly in the value generation, but you aren't carrying the entire physical and financial weight of the structure.
Right.
Under the hood, this is usually structured through what's called a special purpose vehicle or an SPV.
Okay, so what does that actually mean for the buyer?
Well, when you buy a fraction on a platform, you are actually buying legal shares in an SPV that's created solely to hold that one specific property. So it isolates your financial risk to just that building.
Got it. But while the mechanism of buying a slice of the cake makes intuitive sense, we really need to understand the economic engine driving this specific shift right now, specifically in Saudi Arabia in 2026.
Yeah, the catalyst is basically a perfect storm of economic evolution. It's all maturing at once.
Because the old way of doing things forced an investor to tie themselves entirely to one asset's microeconomy, right?
Precisely. If that specific neighborhood struggled, your entire net worth struggled. What is driving the shift away from that model now is the sheer scale of Saudi Arabia's economic diversification initiatives under Vision 2030.
Right, because those are moving from just being plans on paper into massive physical realization.
Exactly. The scale is staggering. I mean, look at the influx of multinational headquarters in Riyadh, or the expansion of the Red Sea trade routes.
Oh, for sure. The cranes are everywhere.
Right. And the capital required to fund these mega projects and the surrounding urban infrastructure, it's immense. Developers need faster, more agile ways to raise capital.
And at the same time, there is this massive surge in everyday investor demand. People see the boom and they want a piece of the upside.
But they require regulation-aware structures that offer low barriers to entry. Fractional ownership bridges that gap perfectly by pooling multiple investors into a single high-quality asset.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because if multiple people are pooling their money together to buy commercial real estate, isn't this mechanically the exact same thing as a REIT, a real estate investment trust?
Oh, that is such a common assumption.
Right, because investors have been buying those on the public stock market for decades.
Yeah, but they function fundamentally differently in how they impact your portfolio strategy. Both REITs and fractional ownership allow you to gain exposure to real estate without buying a whole building, sure.
So what's the difference?
While REITs typically operate as massive blind pools,
Meaning you are buying a share in a giant corporate fund that owns dozens or even hundreds of properties.
Exactly. You don't really know exactly which buildings your money is exposed to. And more importantly, your yield is diluted by the underperforming assets that a massive REIT inevitably holds.
So if a REIT owns like five great commercial towers in Riyadh, but also holds three struggling strip malls in another region, your dividends are dragged down by the failing assets.
You hit the nail on the head. You have no control over the capitalization rates, the cap rates of the underlying portfolio.
Wow, okay.
But fractional ownership gives the investor the power to own shares tied directly to specific properties.
So you are looking at the prospectus for a specific commercial space in Jeddah or a specific residential block in Riyadh and buying a fraction of that distinct asset.
Right. It gives the investor agency. You get to control your own yield by handpicking the quality of the assets rather than handing your money to a fund manager and just accepting the average return.
But having that level of targeted control means you actually have to know what you are picking, right?
Absolutely. You can't just throw darts at a board.
So if we are moving away from blind funds to individual selection, the natural next step is to explore the text's framework for diversification. Like, how do you actually engineer a resilient portfolio?
Well, that requires a deep understanding of how different economic drivers impact different physical structures. The source text breaks this down into three crucial mechanisms.
Property types, geography, and the balance of income versus growth.
Exactly. Let's look at property types first. Because a massive warehouse simply does not function economically the same way a luxury hotel does.
Right. They respond to entirely different market forces.
They have completely different risk profiles and yield structures. The article contrasts several key types. First, you have stable residential properties.
So apartment buildings, housing developments.
Yeah. These offer steady demand and consistent occupancy, especially in cities experiencing rapid urban migration and population growth.
I mean, people will always need a place to live. That makes residential the steady, predictable heartbeat of a portfolio.
Then you transition to commercial properties, like office towers. The mechanism here relies on strong, long-term leasing opportunities.
Like getting a regional corporate headquarters to sign a 10-year lease.
Exactly. Institutional-grade tenants lock in predictable revenue for the fractional owners over a long horizon.
Which provides incredible cap rate stability. But the sector that really jumps out in the source material is logistics and industrial assets.
Oh, this sector is seeing explosive momentum in Saudi Arabia right now.
Really? More than commercial.
Definitely. Logistics properties are heavily benefiting from the massive expansion of regional trade infrastructure. Global supply chains are completely restructuring.
Right, and Saudi Arabia is actively positioning itself as a primary logistics nexus between Asia, Europe, and Africa.
Exactly. As e-commerce penetration deepens across the region, the demand for specialized warehouses, cold storage, and last-mile distribution centers just skyrockets.
So buying a fraction of a warehouse isn't just buying an empty metal box. You are essentially buying a toll booth on the growing e-commerce highway.
I like that. Yes, a toll booth. And finally, the text mentions hospitality and mixed-use developments.
Right, the flashy stuff. Hotels, entertainment districts.
Now, these assets present a very different profile. They offer immense upside potential, particularly with the country's aggressive tourism targets under Vision 2030.
But there's a catch, right?
Always. You have to factor in the cyclical risk. They are highly sensitive to discretionary consumer spending.
Ah, so if global economic conditions tighten and people travel less.
The daily room rates and occupancy levels in a hotel drop immediately. Your yield takes a direct hit.
Makes sense. But, you know, even if you build the perfect mix of residential stability, commercial predictability, and hospitality upside, you could still lose your shirt if all those properties are sitting on the exact same gridlock-prone street in Riyadh.
Oh, 100%. Which brings up the text's next major risk mitigation geography. Geographic diversification is a non-negotiable structural defense.
Because you cannot concentrate all your investments in a single municipal zone, I don't care how fast that city's GDP is growing.
Right. The source emphasizes spreading exposure to insulate your wealth from localized shocks.
And a localized shock could be anything, really. A major local employer relocating, a sudden zoning change, or even a critical infrastructure project getting delayed by 3 years and choking off foot traffic.
Exactly. By holding residential developments in Riyadh,
Yeah.
but balancing that with commercial office spaces in Jeddah or logistics hubs near the ports, you effectively firewall your investments.
So if one regional microeconomy falters, the rest of your portfolio continues to generate yield.
It isolates the systemic risk.
Okay, so the final piece of the diversification puzzle is balancing income versus growth assets. And to me, this is where the actual strategy of wealth generation comes into play. It's very much like building a championship sports team.
Okay, I am curious to hear how you map a sports analogy onto real estate yields.
Well, think about it. Any successful team needs its stable, dependable defenders as the core of the lineup, right?
Okay, I'm following.
In real estate, these are your income-generating assets. They might not double in value overnight, but they reliably pay out a steady 6% or 7% rental distribution every single quarter.
They protect the baseline of your portfolio.
Exactly. They keep the cash flowing. Mm. But you can't win a championship with just defenders. You also need your high-growth assets, your strikers.
The long-term appreciation plays.
Right. Maybe it's a fraction of a new mixed-use development in a completely emerging district. The current rental yield might be low, but the potential for the property value to spike over 10 years is massive.
What's fascinating here is how perfectly that mirrors institutional asset management strategies.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The text highlights that experienced investors deliberately engineer their returns by separating their portfolio with clear intent. They establish core holdings for that predictable stability of the defenders.
Right.
And then they use smaller, highly targeted allocations for emerging growth districts to chase yield compression and capital appreciation over time.
Okay, so we have scouted the players and we understand the mechanics of the assets. But how does an investor practically deploy their capital over time to actually build this sophisticated portfolio?
Because you can't just do it all at once.
Exactly. If I am an investor opening one of these platforms in 2026, I don't just snap my fingers and instantly own a perfectly balanced matrix of assets.
No, it requires a highly disciplined deployment strategy. The text highlights two incredibly powerful mechanical approaches for this: reinvesting rental distributions and gradual capital allocation.
Let's break down the mechanics of reinvesting, because I think a lot of people get this wrong.
They do.
If my fractional warehouse pays out a solid 8% yield this quarter, the natural psychological instinct is to treat that like a bonus check and spend it.
Go buy a new watch or something.
Right. But the strategy suggests I shouldn't just pocket it. I should immediately roll it into a completely different asset class, like a residential block, right?
Yes. If we connect this to the bigger picture, to the mathematical reality of wealth building, doing that triggers compounding portfolio growth.
The snowball effect.
Exactly.
Right.
You are utilizing the capital your assets generate to acquire more assets, which subsequently generate even more capital. This accelerates your diversification matrix organically.
Without requiring you to constantly inject fresh capital from your primary salary?
Right. And that ties directly into the second operational strategy, gradual allocation. This is often referred to in broader finance as dollar cost averaging or drip feeding capital into the market.
Which means suppressing the urge to take your entire life savings and drop it into a single fractional offering on a random Tuesday afternoon.
Please do not do that, because timing the absolute bottom or peak of a real estate cycle is notoriously impossible, even for institutional funds.
So by gradually allocating, you deploy smaller, consistent amounts of capital steadily over several months or years.
Exactly. It smooths out your average entry price. You acquire some fractions when the market is running hot. You acquire some when the market dips.
And your cost basis just averages out over the long term. It completely removes the emotional panic of trying to time the perfect market entry.
When you fuse aggressive reinvestment with disciplined, gradual allocation, you position yourself perfectly to capitalize on the high-demand 2026 macro trends.
Like the urban expansion and the infrastructure development.
Right. While simultaneously shielding your core wealth from short-term market volatility, you are essentially building a durable, automated wealth machine.
Wow. It paints a picture of a very methodical, engineered approach. But as we always do on this deep dive, we need to flip the board and look at the blind spots.
The reality check.
Exactly. We started by talking about the trap of making real estate as easy to buy as a digital stock. A sleek user interface on a smartphone makes investing feel like a video game. So what are the specific hidden risks here?
Well, the source material grounds this conversation with some severe risk management realities.
Yeah.
The paramount rule to internalize is this: the underlying property fundamentals dictate everything.
A frictionless digital app does not magically fix a terrible cap rate.
Precisely. If the underlying property has high tenant turnover, Fractionalizing it just means you own a highly accessible piece of a failing asset.
So just because a platform makes it incredibly easy to buy a slice of a building doesn't mean that building is actually a sound investment.
You still have to perform rigorous due diligence. You have to look at the location quality, the tenant stability, and the macroeconomic demand for that specific asset class in that neighborhood.
Because if you buy a fraction of a commercial office space in a district that corporate tenants are actively abandoning,
your fraction will lose value just as quickly as the whole building would. The fundamental laws of real estate economics have not changed, you know? Only the access point has changed.
Which brings up the vulnerability of the access points themselves. You are trusting a digital platform to legally facilitate and hold all of this wealth.
And that is why aggressive platform vetting is critical. You have to scrutinize their operational fee structures.
Are their management fees so high that they are cannibalizing your entire rental yield?
Right. And what are the legal investor protections? How transparent is the ownership ledger? Do you actually possess a legally binding fractional title to a physical asset?
Or is it merely a synthetic promise written on a startup's internal database?
Exactly. The text specifically mentions platforms like Osul Gamma operating in this emerging space.
Oh, right.
Platforms like Osul Gamma are gaining traction by simplifying the complex reporting and property management processes for the end user. But what is truly vital to understand here is the regulatory environment they operate within.
The source notes that some of these fractional products are currently being stress tested within REGIA's regulatory sandbox, right?
Yes, REGIA being the Real Estate General Authority in Saudi Arabia.
But what does a sandbox actually mean for the investor's risk profile?
Well, regulators want financial innovation, but they are terrified of systemic failure. So they create a walled garden, a sandbox.
Like a safe play area.
Right. It is a highly supervised testing environment where new financial models and platforms can operate with real clients, while the regulators watch their every move like a hawk.
Just to ensure consumer protection laws adapt to the new technology before it rolls out to everyone.
Exactly. So for the investor, it means you are trading the comfort of a 20-year historical track record for ground floor access to a new asset class.
But with a Saudi regulatory safety net actively working to ensure the platform isn't just a digital mirage.
It implies that while institutional confidence is growing alongside regulatory oversight, the sector is still rapidly evolving. Investors must remain hypervigilant.
Always prioritize platforms that offer absolute transparency. Here's where it gets really interesting, though. Because the purchasing process is entirely digital, I think investors inherently assume that exiting the investment will be just as instantaneous.
All the liquidity illusion.
Right. They think they can just tap a sell button on their screen and cash out immediately, like selling an Apple stock.
That is a fundamental misunderstanding of the asset class. And the text provides a very firm reality check here. Fractional real estate is not a highly liquid equity trading on a global stock exchange with millions of algorithmic buyers.
It's a physical asset. It's made of concrete and steel.
Exactly. It carries what we call a liquidity premium. You cannot instantly liquidate a piece of a logistics warehouse just because you need cash for a personal emergency.
Someone else on that specific platform has to actively want to buy your specific fraction of that specific building at your asking price.
And that takes time. The digital age has not erased the physical reality of the asset. You must enter these opportunities with a medium to long-term investment horizon.
So if you require immediate access to that capital within, say, a six-month window,
fractional real estate is entirely the wrong vehicle for those funds, period.
It requires a profound level of patience. Understanding these constraints, the liquidity premium, the rigorous platform vetting, the reliance on basic property fundamentals alongside the tremendous benefits of targeted diversification.
It gives us the complete unvarnished picture of the Saudi fractional real estate landscape.
It demands an engaged, critical investor who actually understands the mechanics of what they are purchasing.
Not just someone looking for a quick flip on an app.
Exactly. So let's bring it all together and recap the journey of this deep dive. We started by looking at how the massive financial barriers of traditional monolithic real estate are being dismantled.
The requirement to buy the entire bakery, as you put it.
Right. We explored how legal SPV structures and digital platforms are creating a new world of accessible, customizable portfolios. They allow you to handpick your assets, completely bypassing the diluted yields of massive blind REITs.
And then we mapped out the structural engineering of a resilient portfolio. balancing steady residential properties with high-growth logistics and hospitality sectors.
And insulating those assets against localized economic shocks by spreading them across multiple geographic hubs. We looked at the mechanics of wealth building, too.
How relentlessly reinvesting your rental yields and deploying capital gradually completely shields you from the impossible game of market timing.
And finally, we face the reality check. The critical importance of understanding liquidity timelines and vetting platforms operating within REGA's evolving regulatory sandbox.
The opportunity to build institutional-grade wealth is more accessible than ever, but it still requires profound financial discipline.
So what does this all mean? It means that while the financial gates to the Saudi real estate market have been thrown wide open by fractional ownership, the requirement for critical thinking and patience remains exactly the same.
The tools are just better and more precise than ever before. You are equipped to build a smarter portfolio, provided you respect the underlying mechanics.
And as we wrap up today, I want to leave you with a final thought to ponder. We've spent this time dissecting what this structural shift means for the individual investor's wealth, but zoom out for a second. Think about what this means for the physical environment around us.
Right, the macro impact.
If fractional ownership continues to explode, and everyday people, not just massive, billionaire developers or state funds, can easily pool their capital to fund regional infrastructure and emerging urban districts, how might that fundamentally change which neighborhoods get built?
It introduces a fascinating dynamic regarding the democratization of urban planning.
If the crowd is suddenly the one holding the purse strings and funding the developments, what will the future skyline of Saudi cities actually look like? It is a massive shift in economic power, straight from the boardroom to the smartphone.
The visual impact on the cities themselves could be profound.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Keep asking questions, keep looking past the surface of the interface, and we'll see you next time.